it wasn't him being pregnant. It was him impregnating his best friend, who was Alexander the Great's best friend that he was, like, allegedly gay with. Hephaestus.
I don't know if that's common.
You don't need to say allegedly. The man's been dead for years.
you're right.
He's not coming for you.
I don't know if that's common knowledge, though.
No, it is common knowledge.
Alexander the Great is gay, yes.
Alexander the Great is like, I'm pretty sure he's like canonically gay.
They were all gay.
He was canonically?
Yeah.
In the history, he's gay in the history books for sure.
Because they say he died from a cold. He didn't die from a cold.
Yeah, that was...
Hephaestion.
Oh, what a name.
Is Alexander the Great's incredible best name. Friend. And I read a fan fiction where...
He impregnated him.
And also, I'm pretty sure...
But what's the...
Although, he was his slave or something. It was
It's a different relationship back then. You can't make analogous links to that.
Well, in the...
I'm defending
this was in the fan
era.
Fiction. He wasn't his slave IRL.
I think he was.
He was a boy toy. Well, I don't think he was a boy toy. I think he was one of his generals, which is really sexy.
That's a kind of boy toy.
In its own way.
I don't know. You might be getting interviewed now, Lizzie.
Yeah, let's talk M-Preg.
No, that's crazy. I didn't know all those things about Alexander the Great.
He's pretty cool. There's actually an anime.
This is how they should teach history in school.
Well, there's an anime called Reign the Conqueror. What'd you say?
Start with M-Preg. And then go from there.
History through the lens of M-Preg.
I mean, you know, people love Pregnant Sonic. You just insert that into history.
Yeah. He's everywhere for those with eyes to see.
It's important. Just make history fan fiction. Kids will eat it up.
I mean, that's, like, a fact.
Well, I guess that's a fact. That's awesome.
People love fan fiction.
That is literally,
that
is the history channel.
You never got into fan fiction?
No, I tried making it.
You tried making it for what?
Like, shows.
I wrote a fan fiction for Castlevania, I'll say it.
When?
But that is something where it's like, I'm not ashamed by much, but if that ever got out, I would kill myself.
Well, I mean, why are you saying it on a mic right now?
Well, I like to talk about things that embarrass me. This was 2.5 years ago, so it was very recent. Wow. In my defense, I was extremely unemployed.
I mean, yeah.
So.
No, you were young. You were young.
I was young.
What was the vibe?
2.5 years ago, that's young.
The vibe was, there's just one character in Castlevania, not in the show, but in the games, called Rosa, and she was turned into a vampire against her will. She tried to kill herself. I love her.
All right, that wasn't that good.
And it's just about her, like, I'm actually not going to say too much because you would be able to find it. So I can't say much. Yeah.
We'd open up a vault that people don't need to find.
Yeah.
Do you think there's people in the 60s that were doing the same shit with the Beatles?
Well, actually, 100%. Do you know how fan fiction started?
No, tell me.
Star Trek fans.
Oh, okay.
And that's also the origin of zines. Star Trek
Although,
fans.
Wouldn't that...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's cool to see how many things that were fan fiction end up becoming a thing.
It's true.
Because what was fan fiction of, like, Twilight or something? And it became a thing?
50 Shades of Grey, I think.
Oh, 50 Shades of Grey.
I don't know for sure.
There was a Star Wars game that's fully based off of fan fiction, like a fully developed Star Wars game.
There was a Harry Styles fan fiction that turned into a full-fledged movie.
What movie?
After. I was reading the fan fiction as the chapters came out in high school. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And there's a lot of laws that protect fan fiction now, too, because...
Oh, yeah.
Who was the writer of Interview with a Vampire? Anne Rice, right?
Okay.
She tried to sue people that were writing fan fiction about the two, like, vampires in her very obviously gay book.
Yeah.
She was like, they're not gay. But then I think that lawsuit is how laws emerged to protect fan fiction writers.
The movie quieted down them being gay. I watched the movie.
Oh, really? It did? I haven't watched it in a long time.
I didn't pick up on the...
Oh, yeah. In the book, it's very like, what the heck?
What are you talking about?
Interview with a Vampire?
Oh, I don't know what that
like
is.
Like, it was really wrong to you.
Huh?
It was wrong to you that they were gay.
I was like, this is really messed up and disgusting.
Yeah.
Vampires should definitely be straight. Just kidding. Obviously, all vampires are gay. But that's neither here nor there.
Mm.
Also, what I said just said wasn't true. Really, I think vampires should be allowed to be straight. So let's talk about music now.
Vampires should be allowed to be whatever they want.
I have a question. Does the word authentic mean anything to you when it comes to music?
Yeah. It means a lot.
Because I know that you said before that you can tell when something is not authentic.
I don't know. Did I say that on here?
No, not on here.
Oh, I've definitely said it to you. Yeah, you can tell when somebody's bullshitting.
Can I ask you, how can you tell? Because, I mean, obviously, it's like, I know that the more you work on something, the closer you are to it. And, like, I can kind of tell with some of the things I work on if someone's kind of bullshitting. But, like, what is the trigger of music? Because as a non-musician, I don't think I hear it.
I don't know if it's something that you could, it's something that you feel.
Just the vibe.
It's just spiritual thing. Yeah, that's an abstract thing. It's like, I mean, like, there's like corporate music where, like, you know.
Well, I don't mean that.
But I mean, it is part of it, because isn't that it's still music?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
When you're listening to, when you see a, you know, you see an ad on YouTube and it has a real shitty Jersey Club beat, because, you know, Jersey Club's big and in right now. You're like, oh, somebody made this to make some money. You didn't make this because you wanted to make, all right, you made this to make money, which it's fine. Dude, people should make money. You know, if they want to make money making shitty music, like, that's fine. But you can just hear songs and it's like, this song was made to be a product, not a piece of art that somebody made. And I don't know if art always needs to be super personal. Like, I make music, like, the music that I make, I don't think is super personal. More so, the mixes are more personal. I just make dance music because I enjoy making dance music. I just think it's such a cool genre, and there's so much space with it, because in the end, you can do whatever you want. As long as it fucking grooves, you literally can do whatever you want. But yeah, sometimes people just make a product. I mean, you see it in pop music. I mean, pop music, literally, they have factories to write songs that are as popular as possible, and, like, they find ways to make it as popular as possible, or, like, it just sounds like shit to me. And it's unfortunate, because pop music wasn't always bad. Pop music used to be, like, I mean, you know, Michael Jackson, Prince, even the Beatles. The Beatles got some great songs. I know people hate on the Beatles, but the Beatles got some bops. I mean, pop music used to be pushing music forward. Same thing with, like, the Beach Boys. Brian Wilson, goated. You do research into Brian Wilson, you will find he is goated. He's like one of like the first people to splice a bunch of recordings together for a song. Good Vibrations, all spliced together from a bunch of different recording sessions around like the country. And if you really listen, you can hear it, and it's super cool. That song is amazing. Good Vibrations is amazing. I don't care about any of the other Beach Boys records. Good Vibrations is a crazy song. Like, the way that like psychedelic music was so popular then, and just when you just think about like the effects that you do now, like, and they didn't have the tools to do the effects like phasing and flanging, you know, now you just get a pedal or you have Ableton and you just fucking throw it on. They had to like actually do it. They had to actually have the two recordings and like have them phase and shit. Do you know what phasing is? Audio phasing? It's essentially when you have two audio recordings, two exactly the same audio recordings, and they're like slightly off aligned from each other. So one's like very slightly slower or very slightly faster, and it ends up making this really crazy sound. Not really crazy sound, but it just sounds off. And sometimes you want that for a track, but other times you don't want that. Sometimes you could even hear it in just like normal life with like speakers. A lot of sometimes, like, one speaker will be slightly slower than the other one, and it'll create a phasing effect. Same thing with flanger. Flanger is just a little different on the timing. Yeah, I mean, in music in general, you hear it underground scene. Or not really underground scene. It's less so in the underground scene. It's more so in, like, more popular artists try to, like, get into a scene or, like, make music that sounds like a scene just because, like, that's the cool thing to do. So, like, you know, I don't know. I can't think of, because I don't really pay attention to, like, bigger artists.
Is it bad to say that that's kind of what FKA Twigs does?
You could say that.
Is that a little sacrilegious?
I don't know that much about FKA Twigs, I'm not gonna lie. She had like the Eusexia thing, which, I mean, there's and they had that out here when there's literally like a Euphoria party out here. It's like, it's a little close. I guess at the end it's Euphoria and Eusexia, whatever, but like, it's a little close.
Well, it's also like FKA Twigs gave us like, was it Mary Magdalene?
Magdalena,
which is such a fantastic record. It's like so, it's so itself, and like all the promotion and all of the way in which it's like from the album cover to the identity of the album. It's so clearly coming from FKA Twigs.
That's fair.
And then Eusexua, especially in the rollout, you could see an artist that was really claiming the space that they were trying to occupy. And that felt inauthentic to me. Like an artist really making sure you knew that that's what they're doing doesn't feel authentic. Someone just doing it feels authentic.
It's like they almost become a caricature of themselves, I feel like, with things like that.
It's similar to me to when you're in elementary school and you tell a lie and then you have to spend the whole rest of the day or the week staying with the lie. Like, it becomes your truth, but it's just, you feel a little anxious because it's like, I can't let go of this thing that I said I happened. And I feel like a lot of musicians, they kind of end up in that realm where you really, you are committed to something that you have to then sustain and uphold, and that seems exhausting.
No, 100%.
I think it's also just like fan behaviors, like
that feeds
they're
into
gonna
it.
Be mad when you change or when you want to evolve and like stuff like that, because like, well, we like you for this, so why aren't you doing this? And then if you cave to that, obviously that's what's gonna end up happening, is you're gonna feel like you're lying. And like,
and I think making performative music, which I mean performing in music, like, that's fine, you build a character, whatever, like, that's fine. But I mean, that's also part of what comes with when you kind of have to like perform to uphold this brand, and then you change. When you're always making music as true to yourself, I feel like the people will always kind of feel that.
Do you feel like when you make music, you change?
Yeah.
Or releasing it, you know, not.
Yeah. I mean, the music I used to make years ago is pretty different from what I do now. Like, I used to make like a lot of club edits and stuff, and I still appreciate that stuff. It's fun. It was fun to make. I learned a lot from it. People really like it. It's mostly what I'm known for, but I just don't want to do it now anymore. It just doesn't, I don't know. The satisfaction of like fully making a song and like making a melody that you love versus like sampling a melody that you love. And this isn't a knock on sampling, because some people like sample in a way that is truly just making it their own.
Yeah.
But in a lot of club music, it's more so you're just kind of like looping a melody, which is fine. I love that. I love that. There's a lot of songs. I mean, I did it. There is no satisfaction like fully performing everything and coming up with everything yourself. And like, people just like love that. Like, it's so difficult, but it's really cool when it works out. Or not even people, just like yourself. Mm-hmm. When you make it and like you can feel yourself gradually getting better at, you know, whatever instrument or synth you're trying to improve at, or whatever, you know, drum machine or things you want to improve at, whether that's like, yeah, like chopping, like you want to get better at making jungle and stuff and chopping breaks in a much more dynamic way versus like it's the same loop throughout the thing. You want to make it more like with a bunch of stutters and all this shit, like, and then you finally get to that and it's like, this is easy for me, like, and then you look back, you know, like 3 years ago and like you couldn't even do most of the shit that you're doing, the shit that you were dreaming about 3 years ago. Like, that feels really good, and that makes it easier to like keep going and keep making music even if you haven't found particular success yet. It's just like feeling that growth where it's like, I can imagine something in my head and maybe I can't do it right now and it's super frustrating, but I have a good feeling in a year or two I can do it. It's pretty cool when you do it. Like, I've gotten a lot better at just like making the melodies that I want to make, more like melancholic kind of melodies, and like chords and stuff that I want to make, and being able to do like solos on tracks. Like, because on my Fixed Rhythms record, there's like some parts that kind of have like key solos. I don't really like them that much anymore, but to be able to like look back on it and being like, I could do something so much better now, like, that's really cool to me. I mean, that's partially why I love, that's why I like, that's why I love sports, just a lot of things. It's just like, yeah, just being able to grow through something and feel that growth, there's nothing as satisfying as that. And that's why like when people like get into anything, it's always like you have to really like appreciate info. And I hate to say, you know, the buzzword thing, you gotta love the process. Yeah. But no, it's true. Like, you really have to appreciate and be able to look back and just being like, damn, I'm still not making good music, but I'm doing the things that I couldn't do last year. And so that is affirmation for myself that, okay, in a year I can do this other thing, and then I can gradually do this other thing, and then I can gradually do this other thing. And then maybe when you're 29, 30, you do the thing that you've wanted to do since you were 17 years old. And that's pretty cool. That's pretty fucking cool.